Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you. And I mean that sincerely. Thank you for, well, honestly, thank you for allowing me to do what I do on Sunday mornings with you. This means so much to me, doesn't it, Marty?
Yes.
Do I bounce around the bathroom on Sunday mornings talking about how much I love this? And what's interesting, some of y'all may or may not know this, I'm a professional speaker. This is what I do. And I travel and get paid for it and everything, but I don't get this excited like I do on Sunday mornings. I do because two reasons, I think. Number one, I get to work with, sorry, Travis, the most beautiful woman in the world. I thought Marty was right there. But,
you call me a goddess.
Yeah. Travis says he'll own the goddess thing on a Sunday morning. That's cool. But the other thing is, every Sunday when I'm done. And I don't know what I'm going to talk about next week. And then life, God, the universe, all the same thing, says, guess what? This is what's on the agenda. And a lot of times it's what's on the agenda for you. A lot of times it's what's on the agenda for me. But what I find out is we have the same agendas, don't we? It seems like. I'm going to conclude talking about this book this morning, although I will never stop talking about this book. This is Edwin Gaines' The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity. Now, when we began this book a couple of months ago, as our tithe from Sangha, we bought 50 copies and gave them to a number of people who were here. I just want to point out something statistically non-judgmental, and that is that statistically, even given a book like that, only about 5% of people will read it. And it's amazing. The books you don't read won't change your life. Have you ever discovered that? I have found that to be true, you know? Henry David Thoreau says, how many men can look back and see how their life changed and mark it by the reading of a book? That's why I read 50 books a year, and listen to probably another 10 or 20. Do you know how easy that is? It's really easy. Someone pointed out to me that if you read 30 minutes a day, and I'm a slow reader, I really am. I read 30 minutes a day, that's a book a week. And it's amazing what can happen for you. Edwin Gaines is my friend. Edwin Gaines I consider to be my spiritual mother. That is because I read the book. It's not the other way around. I just want you to know I'm not endorsing her book just because of that. It's a phenomenal book, and I want to talk about and close with by actually tying this into the Bible. Please tell me, what is prosperity? Because if somebody comes up to you and says, what's Will been talking about? And you'll say, prosperity. And they'll say, oh, really, money? And you'll say, no, prosperity is, say it with me, please. Your live physical body to provide a comfortable worldly home for the spiritual beings that we are. That's one aspect of prosperity. The second aspect of prosperity is relationships that are satisfying, nurturing, honest, and work all the time. If you didn't watch my talk last week on relationships, it will go live. Actually, it's going live right now at willbowenvideo.com. What's interesting, go back one, Jessica, if you would. I want to make a comment about that one. When we talked about, back. That's okay. I want to talk about the aspect of nurturing, and that is that when we think of nurturing, we have this idea of, oh, poor baby, let me nurture you, what you've been through. Nurturing means to encourage someone's growth. It doesn't mean to sit there and waddle with them and go, oh, you poor thing. It means to say, okay, yeah, I get it. Now get up. What are we going to do? Okay. Next one, please. Prosperity is work that we love so much that it's not with play. And finally, prosperity is all the money you can spend. Now, hold on just a second. How do we get there? What are the things that we've talked about? There's four things that you need to do to get these four things. And I'm sure many of you remember. Number one, Mary.
Well, no, I just wanted to say, you know what? We all kind of shouted everything out for the first three.
Yeah. I did not, but I'm glad you observed that one. All right, then let's, you know what? Mary, thank you. Thank you very much. And normally I wouldn't do this, but I think she's right because it ties into what we're talking about. Say this like you mean it. Say it without me. Come on.
Prosperity.
All the money you can spend. Say it one more time.
All the money you can spend.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. Thank you, Mary, because we need to talk about the fact that we feel like somehow money is for everybody else except us. And we go through that often societally, through the teachings of our family, certainly from our friends, that, and we are also taught, and this is not what I'm going to talk about today, but boy, I can preach on this, and I've done it before, that we have this misconcept that people with money are bad. That is perpetuated to keep you from having money. And it's not perpetuated by the people with money. It's perpetuated by the people without money to legitimize their own inactivity of becoming prosperous. Why would I want to become like them? Money, people with money are bad. Whew. I want to tie all that we've talked about together today and do it using a parable from the Bible. Because here's the deal. You can forgive everybody all the time, as Edwin recommends. You can tithe every time to where you're spiritually fed. You can write and monitor your goals, and you can also seek, discover, and follow your divine purpose and still not be prosperous if there's something very key that's missing. Now, let me explain to you by giving you a little bit of context. Tomorrow, Marty and I are leaving with my daughter Leah to go to South Carolina to surprise my father for his 85th birthday. It's particularly a surprise because his birthday is not for another month. So we are showing up, and since y'all don't know him and this video will be delayed a week, I'm not really concerned about him finding out. But the thing I wanted to explain to you was that I'm not from the Midwest. I'm originally from South Carolina. So as soon as I get there, there are going to be certain things happening, such as the consumption of moon pies, boiled peanuts, and if I have, I'm going to take Marty shagging. Now, when I say shagging, most people do just like you just did. I grew up my whole life. The word shagging is you look it up. It is the official state dance of South Carolina. The legislature voted it in. It is the official state dance of South Carolina. If you go back and watch the movie Shag, which was long before The Spy who Shagged Me or whatever the heck it was, if you go back and not watch the Austin Powers thing, but if you understand that there's a very rich culture on the Carolina coasts of dancing to what's called beach music. Now, when you hear beach music, you think, most people think, the Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, this is the Drifters, the Tams, the Swingin' Medallions, okay? And the shag is a slow jitterbug. It's got all the turns and everything like this and the pretzels and everything. I grew up doing it. I used to teach it when I was a DJ at a bar. Now, what in the heck does that have to do with anything? Because I wanted to say the word shag and watch y'all freak out. Because you don't have the contexts sociologically that I do around the word. Therefore, we think we're understanding each other when we're really not, right? When I said I want to take Marty shagging, you should have seen your faces. I need to invite you, as we talk about this parable that is going to tie everything together today, to understand what you think you know about this parable you do not know. This was spoken when Jesus Christ spoke this particular parable, and it's the parable that everyone knows. It's the most, have you done this particular talk? Oh, of course I've done that talk. Everyone talks about this. But when Jesus spoke to people, he was not speaking to people in Kansas City, Missouri in 2015. He was speaking to Israelites back over 2,000 years ago who had different beliefs, different concepts, and everything was different. So the story is actually different. And what I mean is that as I explain to you the story, the real story of the prodigal son, you'll understand how it all ties together. You know, it's funny, when I first went to ministerial school, I saw this minister who had a Bible that was just dog-eared, written in, and everything like that, and I thought, I want one of those. It only took me 20 years to get one. See, just using it over and over. The prodigal son, raise your hand if you've heard this story and so, or if you've even heard the concept, the prodigal son. Well, look, the prodigal son has returned. All right. The prodigal son is not about, as I say, what we think it is. The prodigal son actually only appears in the entire Gospels. Now, this is interesting. A lot of Jesus' stories appear in 1, 2, 3, or all 4. This only appears in the Gospel of Luke, which is unique because the Gospel of Mark was the first one written. We know that the Gospel of Mark was written around 40 CE, about 20 years later. The Gospel of Matthew was written. We know that because a lot of that is what is in Matthew is also in Mark. Then along comes about another 40 years later, Luke is written. Now, the interesting thing about Luke is it has a lot of Matthew and a lot of Mark, but it also has a lot of what's called the Q source. No one's ever been able to quite figure out, we've never found the Q source, but it's stuff that's not in either one. This falls in there, and this is important. Luke 15:11. Now, I'm going to read it to you the way most ministers would, the first part, and then I'm going to point out something significant. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them." So far, so good? Friends, Jesus' audience would have flipped out. Flipped out. The word parable does not mean fable. We think that the word parable means it's a story, right? Tell me a story, tell me a fable, tell me a tale, tell me a parable. The word parable, the reason the teachings of Jesus Christ have been around so long is that he taught in parables, and the word parable comes from the Latin parible, which means to throw beside. It means to take something that you think you get and understand and throw something that's so totally outside of that, beside it, you go, Let me explain to you something a little about Israelite culture, okay? Number one, when the father died, everything was left to the oldest. When the father died, two-thirds of everything went to the oldest son. When the father died, two-thirds of everything went to the eldest son. The remaining third was split among the other sons. Anybody notice anybody getting left out here? Okay, yeah. Mom, women, okay, all right. Women were basically, they were non-citizens. They did not count, okay? So get this now. In Israelite culture, you would never presume to ask your father for your inheritance before he were dead because that is the same as wishing him dead. And if you read the Old Testament, there are 10 commandments, friends, but I've read it 20, 30 times, and I'm here to tell you that honor thy father and thy mother is repeated the most often. Jesus' audience would have jumped up when they heard this and said, "He did what? He went to his father while he was still alive and said, 'I want my inheritance.' Wait a minute, it's not even the older brother. This is the younger brother that comes in and says, 'I want my inheritance.' It's only a third." What does the father do when he says that? With this great insult, you've got to understand, your son has just come up and said, "I wish you were dead. Give me the money." What does the father do? Legally, by the way, according to Israel culture, he could have stoned him to death. Legally. The neighbors would have joined in. What does he do instead? He gives him the money. He fulfills his wishes. He gives him the money. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. I love how the Bible says partying. Dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout the country, and he began to be in need. So the citizens of that country sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. Anybody know anything about religions knows that pigs are unclean to Israelites. The point of the story is, the dude got the money from the father, went out, partied, and he was as low as he could possibly go. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? And here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him." I like the King James Version better. It says he fell on his neck and kissed him. He couldn't help but hug his child. He was so grateful to see him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly bring out a robe." Then he corrected himself. He said, "The best one. Put the best robe on my son. Put a ring on his finger." This wasn't giving him a gift. This was a mark of authority. He was being put back into place in the household. "And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us celebrate and eat. The son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. I know Marty's an only child. I have brothers. Anybody else here have brothers and sisters? Okay, let's see how the brother handled this. "Now the elder son was in the field, and when he came in and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound.' Then the elder brother became angry and refused to go in." Pout, pout, pout. "His father came out and began to plead with the older brother, but he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I have worked like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I may celebrate with my friends.' But when his son of your," but I love this line, "'but when this son of yours comes back,'" he doesn't say my brother. He says, "'when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him?' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours,'" he corrects him, "'was lost and has been found.'" We look at people and their finances and we judge them, and in so we limit ourselves. We think that God is somehow going to be offended when we ask. Jesus Christ said, "It is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." The thing that keeps us back, if we tithe, if we forgive, if we find our divine purpose, if we set goals, is we'll never rise any higher in any level of prosperity, than we believe we deserve. Everybody take a deep breath. You will have the finances, the relationships, the job, the health that you feel you deserve. And let me share with you, no one's going to give you permission to have it. You give it to yourself. Anything you desire, you deserve. This story is so beautiful because Jesus is saying God does not get affronted when we ask. God says, "Here." And we come back all embarrassed because what we did with it. And God says, "I love you. Here's more. I love you." And what's really funny, what's great about this story, which I don't even know if you've quite caught yet, what happens when the father dies? Who gets 2/3? The oldest brother. So when he's sitting there having a snit about his father giving away the father's stuff, he's like, "I've been here all this time. You haven't ever given me a goat or anything. And here you give the fatted calf to my brother. You're giving away your stuff to this kid who disrespects you." And the father corrects him. He goes, "Dude, I'm not giving away my stuff. I'm giving away your stuff." Do you get it? When the Father divided everything, he no longer owned anything. He lost his place. He turned it all over to the older brother. What did the older brother do? Work, work, work like a dog, miserable, unhappy, when all the time he was rich. He just needed to realize it. The same is true for you. Don't believe people around you. Don't believe the media. Don't believe the junk that runs in your head. Anything you desire, you deserve in any area of life. I told you a lie earlier. I told you that story only exists in the book of Luke. That's not true. It actually also exists in the Lotus Sutra of Mahayana Buddhism. That exact same story. Exact same story. With one little change. Same story, two sons, one asks for the money, father divides it all between the two of them, one goes off and parties till he, broke, the other one stays here and works. But in this story, and it's a more Shakespearean story, I like this one, because what happens is the boy's coming back, the father is an old man, so he can't run up and meet him. So he sends servants to do that, and when they run up there, they scare the boy off. He thinks that they're coming to drive him off the land. He has been gone for so long, he doesn't remember what his home looks like. He doesn't remember what his father looks like. Let me ask you a question. When it comes to prosperity and God being your prosperity, do you ever get the point where you don't know what home looks like and you don't know what your father looks like? You just feel so separated in some areas of prosperity? Well, in this story, what happens instead is the father hires the boy, and the boy doesn't recognize his father. He can't take on that he still really is welcome and still really belongs there and still really deserves everything. And the father even tries to tell him in the Buddhist version of the story. And yet the boy doesn't believe it. So what the father does is he keeps giving him more responsibility and more money and more responsibility and more money and more responsibility and more money. The moral of this is God wins. No matter where you are psychologically, if you're not where you want to be in your world, you're going to suffer. If you're not where you want to be physically, if you're not where you want to be with money, if you're not where you want to be with your career, if you're not where you want to be with relationships, you're going to suffer. God's going to keep giving you a little bit more responsibility until you can handle more and more, and it keeps you moving in the direction. There's nothing we can do to move out of God's graces except refuse to participate. It's there for all of us. Take somebody's hand. Let's close in prayer. Travis, may I? God, the hand that we hold is a prosperous hand. The hand that we hold is a deserving hand. The hand that we hold is a loved hand. The hand that we hold is a blessed hand. The hand that we hold is the hand of God. For God is all places equally present. We open our minds to all that is possible for us, and we affirm that for everyone else. And so it is. Amen. Amen.
Thank you for listening. I hope you find this to be a blessing in your life. If you do, be sure and podcast these broadcasts. That is, set your device, your phone, your iPad, your computer to automatically receive these. You can do it through iTunes or you can do it through podbean.com. Go to willbowen.podbean.com and subscribe. Have a great week. I look forward to talking to you real soon. You can connect with me at will@willbowen.com. Have a great day. Bye-bye.